it was always his father's dream that he'd be a baseball player. And so I didn't try to talk him out of it, but I did say to him, you know, playing baseball is a lot harder than you think it is.
That's Chicago Bulls owner Jerry Reinsdorf talking about the most unusual chapter in Michael Jordan's career, his brief and divisive stint as a minor league baseball player. Many fans think of Jordan's baseball career as a failure, but the truth is more complicated. Today, ahead of The Last Dance, we hear from a former baseball writer who was a skeptic at first, but learned over time not to underestimate his airness. I'm Mina Kimes.
I'm Sunmin Kimes, mother of Mina Kimes. It's a Friday, May 8th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Happy Mother's Day. Mina will take it from here.
Perfect.
No, let's do it again. Let's do it again.
No, you nailed it. That was flawless. For real.
Oh, please. Okay.
Yeah, that was perfect. Thank you, Mom.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Good morning, Steve. Are you ready to talk about things that happened many, many years ago?
Yes, I am. I am. I've forgotten a lot, but I'll try to dredge it up.
Steve Wolf is a former senior writer at ESPN. He retired last year. Steve, the episodes this weekend of The Last Dance cover Michael Jordan's time in minor league baseball, a time that you know very well because when it all went down, you were in the middle of the hoopla surrounding his brief stint in Birmingham, Alabama. Can you remind us how it was that Jordan even came to be an outfielder for the Birmingham Barons in the first place?
Well, after the 93 season, he announced his retirement.
I lose the sense of motivation and the sense of to prove something as a basketball player. It's time for me to move away from the game of basketball.
There were all sorts of speculations as to why he did it.
I've been on this roller coaster for 9 years. It's just time for me to ride something else.
I believe him when he said he was burnt out. And he announced he was going to play baseball to fulfill a dream that he and his father shared.
His father had recently passed away, right?
Yeah, his father had been murdered, which was wrenching in itself.
We're coming on the air now with word that the body of James Jordan has been found. The cause of death, apparently a .38 caliber gunshot wound to the chest.
He was crying, he was full of tears. You know, he's talking how close him and his father was.
There is no question, however, about how close Michael and James Jordan were.
He was spent. And the opportunity arose because Jerry Reinsdorf owned the Bulls and the White Sox, that Michael Jordan could actually put on a White Sox uniform.
I'd like to announce that the Chicago White Sox are extending an invitation to Major League Camp in Sarasota. He'll be reporting there on the 15th with the catchers and the pitchers.
So they signed him and he went to spring training, and the whole world was looking on in both skepticism and excitement. I was covering spring training for Sports Illustrated at the time. I had been a baseball writer for, at that point, 15 years. And I called into the office and I said, this is a really interesting story, this sort of dichotomy between baseball people who were not happy about Michael Jordan doing this and the fans who are incredibly excited about it.
Steve, you mentioned that Michael had been talking about this plan with his father before he was killed. What made them think it was even feasible that he could play baseball at a high level?
I think he was a very good baseball player in high school, but obviously basketball took preference. I'm sure his father and he talked about it all the time, about how much fun it was to watch him play baseball. Michael probably wondered, I wonder what would have happened if I had taken up baseball. And this was his opportunity to do that.
At the time, knowing what it takes to play baseball at the highest level, how did it strike you, the notion that Michael Jordan, who was 31 and had not played competitive baseball since he was in high school, was trying to make the jump at that stage in his career?
Well, I was among the chorus of skeptics. I thought it was delusional that he could think he could play baseball at a major league level. And I was also struck by how resentful players were. One scout said, baseball is about bat speed and he doesn't have it. Randy Johnson said, he won't know what Air Jordan is until I brush him back. So people were a little nasty about it.
So you're at spring training and you were asking players and coaches about their feelings about Jordan. But what's Jordan himself up to? Is this tryout happening separately from the rest of the Sox players?
He was training with the White Sox. He was in the Major League camp with the White Sox. And he was playing in their exhibition games.
Reality took hold today for Michael Jordan as he took to the baseball field for his first game. Jordan struck out twice, being fooled both times on off-speed pitches.
They elected to send him to Birmingham, which was the Double-A team, which is still a big stretch. You've got the Southern League. There were a lot of prospects. There were some very good baseball players in it. But the reason they chose Birmingham was that it had the facilities to accommodate the crush of media and fans.
When you say crush, how much of a circus was it around spring training that year?
It was a madhouse.
They packed the stands as early as 4 o'clock with balls, bats, gloves, basketballs, anything for Michael Jordan to sign.
They were selling out every game. There were vans selling Nike merchandise. You could buy a Michael Jordan model glove from Wilson. They had prepared for this. And that sort of added to the feeling that this was a cynical ploy, that they see a marketing advantage here, and maybe this is what it's about, right?
When did you first get to see him actually play baseball, and what did you think?
I watched him in spring training. There were a couple of inter-squad games. I watched him take batting practice. And he moved well, but he clearly hadn't played the game in a long time, and his batting stroke was pretty weak. The White Sox had a batting instructor named Walt Reiniak, who was very specific and very successful, and he taught a certain way of hitting. So he was trying to teach Michael Jordan the Walt Reiniak school of hitting, and it wasn't working for Michael. I remember in my original story, I described a weak ground at a third as one small dribbler for a man, one giant dribbler for mankind. The story I wrote was a little snarky and very skeptical.
Let's talk about that story. So you went down, you watched him play, and you came back to Sports Illustrated with what became a cover story. The headline, Steve, was Baggett Michael.
It was Baggett Michael. Michael Jordan and the White Sox are embarrassing baseball. The story I wrote was, well, it's not going to happen, but he's giving it a good, it was kind of a good try story. But the minute I saw that headline, I kind of realized that I would probably be doing a podcast about it 21 years later. And there weren't even podcasts back then. So,
by the way, public service announcement, often reporters do not write the headlines.
I know. I still cringe every time I see it, and I see it often. But I wish they had run the headline by me.
Michael Jordan's critics now include Sports Illustrated. The magazine published an article this week calling for Jordan to give up his baseball tryout with the Chicago White Sox.
It was a cause célèbre. Jordan himself severed all relationship with Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I just can't see how, you know, what I'm doing is going to hurt the game. I mean, if you're good enough, you'll make the team. If you're not good enough, you know, the cream will come to the top no matter what.
This is an athlete who had been criticized at that point fairly severely at points in his career. Why do you think your piece, or rather the headline of your story in particular, got under his skin so much?
I think he was rightly insulted. He wasn't out to embarrass baseball. He was out to pursue a dream that we thought at the time was delusional, but we should not have come down on him that hard.
When you were watching him in spring training, did you see any signs that led you to believe he might have a shot at this?
he moved really well. He was fast. He was quick. But even then, what I noticed was that he was getting along really well with the other guys on the team. In retrospect, the most amazing thing is that he was willing to go from being the man to being one of the guys.
So how did a season go as a Birmingham Baron?
Actually, it went really well at the beginning. He had, a 13-game hitting streak out of the box. But then pitchers started throwing him curveballs. They had been challenging him with fastballs. He was able to handle the fastballs, which is saying something. But he couldn't recognize a curve. And that's when Mike Barnett, the hitting coach in Birmingham, began to change his swing.
All right, after the break, let's talk about how Michael Jordan went about trying to turn things around and whether it worked. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Steve, we discussed how Michael Jordan had a lot of skeptics, yourself included, but you reported that his teammates respected him and seemed to enjoy playing with him. What was it about him that they liked?
They liked that he was competitive. They liked that he was, willing to be one of the guys. And they liked his work ethic. He didn't act like a superstar. They got a really nice bus because he was there. The local bus company decided to create a special Michael Jordan bus. So they were happy to have Michael along for that. But he was playing ping pong with them, he was playing Yahtzee with them, and occasionally he would play basketball with them. And there were some good basketball players on the Birmingham Barons. So the games became legendary.
When he struggled early in the season and his batting average was, flirting with the Mendoza line, did you hear anything about how he felt? I mean, we're talking about arguably the greatest player in NBA history, who has been wildly successful at one sport his entire career, struggling in a new one that couldn't have been easy for him.
No, it wasn't easy for him, but here's where he lucked out. His manager was Terry Francona, young Terry Francona, and he would go on to manage two World Series with the Red Sox. I had the utmost respect for Terry. I'd known him since he was a rookie. He was just a really smart, caring guy. I hate to use the analogy, but he was kind of like the Phil Jackson of baseball. He talked to Michael with respect about hitting and about baseball, and he helped him get through the slump. By the same token, what Michael did for Terry was that he was putting him in a situation where Terry was answering questions from big-time reporters, a lot of cameras. He was teaching Terry how to deal with the pressure. So they were feeding off one another, and they actually became close friends.
What do you think was the low point for Michael in those early days?
It might have been right after they started throwing him curveballs. As Mike Barnett, the hitting coach in Birmingham, explained, you have to identify the curveball, and then you have to figure out a way to hit it. And that was the most frustrating thing for him. And once he began to understand how to do that, the hits began to come.
1-1 pitch to Michael. Yeah! Looping drive, it'll score at least one.
And they worked at it day and night. he would take five different sessions of batting practice a day to get better. And it was on July 30th that Michael hit his first home run.
Fly ball deep to left again. Ratliff going back at the warning track. Look it up. It is Gonzo Jordan. He's done it.
You wrote about Mike in spring training, and that's when the cover story came out. When was the next time you saw him on the baseball field?
So I had been following his progress, and there was a certain point in August when I had an opportunity to go see Birmingham play. And as it happened, he wasn't in the lineup that day, but he was taking batting practice. And I watched him in this darkened batting cage. I was astounded at how much he had progressed. Those weak swings that I saw in spring training were now line drives. He was able to hit to all fields. He was able to hit the ball on the button. He really looked like he had a true major league swing.
2-1 pitch hit well to deep left field. Bauer's looking up. This ball is Gonzo Jordan.
He's driving in some runs, right? He's stealing a lot of bases. He does have a talent for this game. And, you know, maybe we were wrong. I went back to New York and I wrote a story about it. And Sports Illustrated read the story. And they basically told me, bag it, Steve. they were not interested in doing a mea culpa. So,
what did the story say?
The story said he does have a place on a baseball field. Whether he makes it to the major leagues is still a long shot. But let's put our cynicism aside. Let's put our skepticism aside and enjoy what he's doing.
Why do you think they didn't want to publish it?
I think they were too proud to do that.
Steve, when you had your epiphany about Michael that led you to write that, how aware were most people of the improvements that he had made? Was there a lot of buzz around him at that point in the season?
No, because his batting average was around 200. And that's what people look at first, right? If you saw that he was hitting 198, you would think he's a failure, right? There are stories of other major leaguers who had terrible minor league seasons, but clearly they were showing talent and the team stuck with them. And maybe this is the case with Michael Jordan.
So what happened next for him in his baseball career?
What happened next was he went to the Arizona Fall League, which is a higher level baseball than even the Southern League, and he hit 255. He was clearly tracking towards at least a promotion to AAA and maybe a call up to Chicago in 1995. But as it happened, baseball was in a work stoppage.
For the first time in American history, a union is about to go on strike, even though its members make an average salary of $1 million apiece.
And Michael didn't want any part of that.
This labor crisis has the potential to match in severity and longevity the players' walkout of 1890, which lasted a full year.
So when the strike hit, Michael didn't even consider crossing the picket line to get his chance.
No, he was a player rep himself. He was not about to go against the grain there. So he decided to give up baseball. Tito Francona and Mike Barnett maintain to this day he could have made the major leagues.
What about you? Do you think he would have made it? And how good could he have been?
I think he could have made the major leagues. I'm not sure he would have been a starting outfielder. You know, I look at the current landscape of baseball. Michael Jordan would have been a lot like Michael Taylor, the Nationals outfielder.
It's gone. Goodbye. Michael A. Taylor with a grand slam home run.
Fast and very graceful and has a little pop.
And there goes Taylor. That ball's in left field and he will score. 4-1 for the running wild Nationals.
So Steve, because of that strike and the timing of it all, Michael went back to basketball and, well, the rest is history. You can see it play out on The Last Dance. But, you know, his first full season back, the Bulls set a record for the most wins in NBA history. They won the title that year. Spoiler alert, the next two seasons after that as well. When he initially retired in 1993, you mentioned he did it in part largely because he was burned out. How did that season in baseball affect his mindset for coming back to the NBA? Did he get what he needed out of it?
Definitely, definitely. Terry Francona said that Michael rediscovered his joy in sports that year. Baseball reminded him of why he was in this in the first place. Michael came back to basketball, not only rejuvenated, but I think he realized how much he missed the competition, and how much the team needed him.
Did your experience with this story change the way you look at players like Jordan at all who are chasing these crazy dreams?
Yes. I remind myself, don't be quite so presumptuous. Don't be quite so cynical and skeptical. Take people at their word until they go against it. In a way, I became a slightly different writer after that.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Mina, thank you very much.
Coming up, what's it really like to go one-on-one with Michael Jordan if you're 12 years old? Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know, and it's another personal one from one of our own. Wayne Drays, a senior writer at ESPN, tells us how, when he was 12 years old, he went one-on-one with Jordan.
Wayne, I don't know if you know, but there's a show on ESPN called The Last Dance. You might have heard of it.
I've heard a little bit about it here in Chicago. It's been talked about occasionally.
So, Wayne, you not only live in Chicago right now, you were born and raised there. Paint me a picture of what 12-year-old Wayne Drays looked like, acted like in 1989, right before Michael Jordan's career takes off.
Awkward. Very, very awkward. Tall, lanky, poor choice of fashion, if you even want to call it that. And as a basketball player, I was the hustling, defensive, rebounding kid who had very little, if any, actual basketball skill.
And yet you loved basketball, so much so that in the summer of 1989, you did something special to hone your skills.
I did. You could not grow up in Chicago and a 12-year-old or, you know, around that age and that time and not love Michael Jordan.
Jordan brings them to their feet in Chicago.
You know, everybody who played on their local rec team, there was a fight every year to get number 23. So that year, I was super lucky. My parents surprised me with a ticket to Michael Jordan's flight school basketball camp that summer. About 200, 300 kids, and it was awesome. I mean, we all got t-shirts that said Michael Jordan's flight school, and the word flight was in the actual font on the Air Jordan 4 sneakers. Like, oh. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever, that it was not some generic print. It was the font.
So, was Michael Jordan there?
Michael Jordan was in and out. There were all these rumblings I remember hearing that, and if this was a sleepover camp at a small college outside Chicago, the story was always that Michael would show up at night and play these incredible pickup games with the counselors and the coaches and a bunch of the sort of older kids, if you will, long after we were in bed. But on one day, he came in and gave a short discussion, a short lesson, if you will, about the triple threat position. Michael walks in and he's standing under the basket and explaining, you know, the power you have as an offensive player. If you can, you know, pass or shoot or jump and the defense doesn't know what you're going to do. And then at one point towards the end, he asks for a volunteer. I was off to Jordan's left towards the back of this crowd of anxious, excited, super lucky kids. At first, I remember I didn't want to raise my hand because, again, I am not skilled. I am not great. And I was probably a little bit shy at that point. But everybody's hand went up, so I raised mine. At the moment I did, Jordan looked my way.
Oh.
And he pointed basically right at me, or I thought right at me. And me and a few others that were sitting near where I was kind of raised their hand with this, like, you mean me sort of look. And I don't remember exactly what he said or how he noted that he meant actually me, but he did. And so I climbed over these campers and stepped over to kind of the free throw line, top of the key kind of area. And Michael Jordan handed me a basketball and asked me to show him the triple threat.
Wayne, I would have blacked out if it was me. I mean, how are you feeling?
I mean, heart's racing. You're just sort of in a blur. My probably only thoughts at that point were don't embarrass yourself and don't get hurt. And so, you know, I take the ball and I plant my pivot foot and jab step to my left. And, you know, I fake a pass to, you know, nobody because it's really just Michael and I standing up on the court. And I'm kind of doing these fakes. I think Michael is mildly amused. And he's not playing defense. He's not like, you know, ignoring me, but he's just kind of like, okay. And at one point he says to me, you know, I don't know what his exact words were, but do something. So I'm like, okay. I faked to my left. I took one dribble to my right. And I just threw up this like prayer of a shot. In my mind, this sort of beautiful, perfect, my form is, you know, A plus jump shot. Now that I know myself back then and I know what most 12-year-old boys shoot like, it was probably hideous, but it went in the basket. It fell in the basket and I was just stunned. And from there, I figured it was sort of over. You know, that's it. I mean, we had this great moment. How cool was this? I did the triple threat. I made a shot around Michael Jordan. And I'm going to go sit down. And he calls me back and he says, no. He says, now you got to play defense.
Oh, Lord.
And so I'm like, okay. I knew of and had obviously heard plenty of stories about Michael Jordan's competitiveness. I just didn't think it would sort of come in the form of, you know, a 12-year-old camper. But sure enough, I scored on Michael Jordan, and he kind of, I think, wanted to show that he could score on me. I don't know. And so he says, come back and play defense. Now, at this point, I am definitely thinking, don't get hurt. Don't be embarrassed. And he holds the ball at his waist and, you know, in this pose that we now have seen Michael Jordan, you know, hold over hundreds of NBA players over the years. This just intimidating, leaning forward, again, ball at the waist. Is he going to shoot? Is he going to dribble? Is he going to pass? And these defenders, you know, just this look of helplessness. It was me. And so I'm standing there and he's like faking like left and right. And I mean, like, I don't even know what he's doing. And by the time he goes to his next fake, my body has yet to recover from the previous fake. It's just this like whiz of amazement of human movement that I had never stood in front of in my life. And then all of a sudden he whips past me. And by the time I turn around, he's going up for a very lazy, subdued, drop the ball in the basket dunk. I told my friends, like, you know, Michael Jordan dunked on me. Now that was a little bit of an exaggeration. I was still flat footed at the free throw line. But he had done this move and put on the show, and it was incredible.
Wayne, you scored on Michael Jordan. You got dunked on by Michael Jordan. You are now 43, early 40s, right?
Yep, you got it, 43.
Is it fair to say you peaked as a 12-year-old?
It is fair to say that I should have just held that pose like he did over Byron Russell and walked off the court and not played defense. Because that was pretty much it as a basketball career for me.
Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Mina.
I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Ahead of Mother's Day, we'd like to celebrate our real producers, the moms behind our team. Dr. Cassandra Hyacinth, Marion Johns, Dr. Maria Martin, Susan DiNallo, Sudman Kimes, Sally Nantel, Aileen Tennant, Mary Tennant, Siobhan Drury, Joan Tro, Anna Maria Tuminello, and Annette Vale. Happy Mother's Day. I'll talk to you Monday.